Tonight I'm going to talk about suffering, which is kind of an odd topic to pick, I suppose. And I'll begin by saying, you know, if you just look at the way we human beings are designed, we have a mind that can remember the past and anticipate the future. We have these exquisitely sensitive bodies. You know, we can feel something brush up against an arm. We feel a tiny grain of sand in a shoe. We have these bodies capable of feeling so much. And we have these psyches capable of feeling so much. You know, and given all this, it's not really a surprise that life is challenging for humans, that the human situation is a profoundly vulnerable one, ultimately. So I just want to sort of frame what I'm going to say in this recognition of, you know, almost normalizing, you know, there's a lot of challenge to go through life with a human body and a human psyche. The reason I was thinking about suffering is that the past week I became fascinated with the book of Job, which is one of the books of the Bible. And you may or may not be familiar with it. It's in the Hebrew Bible, the portion of the Bible that Christians call the Old Testament. And the sort of the thumbnail sketch of Job is that Job is a really good guy, and all these tragedies land on him. He loses his family, he loses all his wealth, and finally gets hit with these horrible diseases, and he's covered with boils, and he has these three quote-unquote friends who come to sit with him, and these friends are giving him this very pat advice of, you know, well, God rewards good people and he punishes bad people. If you're being punished, you must have done something bad, you know, this sort of thing. And Job, in a variety of ways, is resisting that argument and saying, you know, not saying quite so baldly, but essentially saying that's too simplistic, you know, and it doesn't quite explain my story. And really, Job is part of this much longer conversation in Western theology about the nature of suffering. You know, if God is good, why is there evil in the world? If God is good, why are there people in pain? You know, and why do bad things happen to good people? All this stuff. And even that question, why do bad things happen to good people? You know, it's funny when we think about a good person or a bad person, that's in some ways a complex judgment. You know, there's a lot that we might observe, and you know, if I'm calling someone a good person, it's presumably I'm looking at how they behave. I'm thinking about the vibe they create. You know, there's a lot that goes into that. Whereas when we talk about good or bad things, we're often talking much more directly about what I like, what I don't like, stuff that I like happening, stuff that I don't like happening. And it's really this lesson that, you know, especially Buddhism teaches, again and again, we misunderstand the nature of reality and the nature of ourselves when we go around measuring everything with the yardstick of what I like and what I don't like. Essentially this going around the world with that as my governing yardstick, that is what Buddhism calls dukkha. And of course, Buddhism has a very interesting take on the whole question of suffering, a very different take from Christians. First of all, Buddhism distinguishes, you know, and again, there's, you know, problem of translation, but essentially they distinguish between pain and suffering. Pain is part of life. Suffering is essentially what we cause by our attachments. You know, pain is the horrible thing that happens to me out of the blue. Then suffering is, you know, all the verbal talk, you know, why does this always happen to me? Or why can't I ever get a break? You know, all everything that gets piled on mentally on top of that. And Buddhism has quite a bit to say about what we can do about suffering and bringing about the end of suffering. But even the end of suffering, even achieving enlightenment or nirvana, does not mean that we don't experience pain. I remember someone once pointing out that the way that so many communities, especially in America, talk about, Buddhist communities, talk about enlightenment, said if you listen to the conversation about enlightenment and everything that's said about it, you could really take out the word enlightenment and substitute the word immunity and put it in, and the whole conversation would make sense. And of course, enlightenment is not immunity at all. In fact, it, in some sense, is quite the opposite. You know, it's feeling everything much more vividly, which would mean both feeling the pleasure as well as the pain of life much more vividly. And Buddhism doesn't really go into, Buddhism acknowledges that there is pain in life. Buddhism doesn't even touch the question of trying to explain why there's pain, why it's not fair, why it happens to some people, not to other people. There are some, what I would call, unfortunately, shallower interpretations, both of Buddhism and Hinduism, that explain pain a lot in terms of karma. And, you know, well, if you're suffering in this life, you must have been a bad person in the last life. So it's similar to the Christian thing. And unfortunately, this has been used to justify all kinds of horrible things like the caste system. But on the whole, Buddhism is much more concerned not with explaining why we suffer, but we're explaining why there's pain, but how do we deal with it? How can we use it as a tool of wisdom? And really, I mean, even the book of Job is fascinating because, you know, for chapters after chapter, Job is debating with his friends, and Job keeps on going back to this, you know, I want to make a case before God. You know, I want to, you know, essentially I want God to give me a good solid explanation. And at the end of the book, it's stunningly beautiful. The whole book is very poetically beautiful. At the end of the book, God actually appears, and he speaks to Job out of a whirlwind, and he doesn't explain anything. He starts out with, where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? And it's just this stunning vision of the grandeur of the cosmos and the utter unknowability of all the cosmic forces. And it's humbling, you know, and it's almost in a Zen way, it unasks the question, you know. And it's funny. I think I would say in our culture, which is a very verbal culture, we put a lot of stock in explanations. And it is true that in certain very specific social situations, an emotionally intelligent explanation can be very important. You know, there was a misunderstanding and, oh, let me explain, you know. And, you know, there's times that a rapport can be reestablished with a thoughtful explanation. But for the most part, when we get caught in the place that we're explaining stuff, we're not in a good place. You know, we're running on an automatic pilot kind of thing. We're not present at all when we're, you know, I have to explain myself kind of thing. And really the part of our mind that likes to explain, I think, is also the part of our mind that wants an explanation, you know. And the funny thing is, an explanation does nothing to soothe pain. You know, if you fall and break your arm, you know, someone from medical school could come and tell you all about the circuitry in your arm that causes the pain and all that. Like, none of that is what you want to hear. None of that helps the pain in your arm, you know.
It does establish the causation and effect and help to...
I'm glad that somebody knows that so they can set the arm and all that. Yes, absolutely. But in other words, just the raw information itself, insofar as it establishes practice, that's very helpful. Yes. Um, So Buddhism talks a lot about ways that we can respond given that we're in a challenging situation, given that we're in suffering, pain, you know, whatever unfairness there is, ways that we can grow from it. And really, I would say from my study of Buddhism and study of some of the other wisdom traditions, the way I would formulate it is very simply, all things contain the teaching. And the teaching, you know, like the Dharma, you know, there are sutras written and there's actually verbal formulations of Dharma. You know, in some sense, the real Dharma is when we're out in the world and whatever raw challenge grabs us and we have to respond to it, you know, like that's the real Dharma. And that's the real teaching. The, you know, the potent teaching is when we're totally in the rough and tumble of life and we're forced into some crisis moment and have to choose. And I'd say, you know, looking back on my life, it's very clear to me that many of the things that I struggled with, many of the things that had me ripping my hair out at other points in my life, that I understand now the wisdom that I gained by going through them. And so the statement, all things contain the teaching, is almost a statement of trust or a statement of faith that in the things that I'm currently struggling with, where I don't see the answer, where it doesn't make sense to me yet, you know, that trusting that there will be some kind of teaching that comes from that. And ultimately, I would say maybe the highest level is having a kind of gratitude for that teaching. That's something I certainly can do in some instances with something that's decades in the past. It's very hard for me to imagine in the moment that I'm struggling with something actually being grateful for that struggle, you know. So at this point, I'll distribute the quote sheet. First of all, I'll share it with the Zoomies. So I just put it in the chat. And for folks who did not get an advanced copy, now. So first of all, from the Buddha, the moment you see how important it is to love yourself, you will stop making others suffer. And there's a lot that I like about that quote. It really, I think, you know, if we could really teach all children in this country simply self-compassion, you know, and the techniques of cultivating self-compassion, I think we'd have such a healthier culture and such a happier culture.
Is this other quotes from Buddha preserved in some writing? Like in Bible, Jesus is...
So, it's very... This is a little bit off the topic, but it's... The original Buddhist collection is called the Triptika, and it's... Which literally means three baskets of scrolls, and all of it is attributed to the Buddha. Now, for one person to have said all that, they would have to have lived 500 years, so probably not all of it was said by the Buddha himself. But there are some particular writings, for example, the Dhammapada, which many scholars believe represent the actual sayings of the historical Buddha. So, Freud said, "We're never so defenseless against suffering as when we love." Just a wonderful statement about the nature of vulnerability. Proust said, "We're healed of suffering only by experiencing it to the fullest." So true. You know, and again, it's that distinction, what Race Mimenikin calls clean pain versus dirty pain. Carl Jung said, "Neurosis is suffering which has not yet discovered its meaning." A couple from the Zen master Kodo Suwaki's, he said, "At some point, you've got to slap yourself in the face and seriously ask yourself, is your personal gain or loss really worth this overwhelming joy and suffering? He also said, you suffer because you don't want to accept what has to be accepted. Just very blunt and zen. I love it. Helen Keller said, the character cannot be developed in ease and quiet. Only through experiences of trial and suffering can the soul be strengthened, ambition inspired, and success achieved. A long one from Karl Friedrich Durkheim. The man who, really being on the way, falls upon hard times in the world will not, as a consequence, turn to that friend who offers him refuge and comfort and encourages his old self to survive. Rather, he will seek out someone who will faithfully and inexorably help him to risk himself so that he may endure the suffering and pass courageously through it. Only to the extent that a man exposes himself over and over again to annihilation can that which is indestructible arise within him. In this lies the dignity of daring. So that's a very powerful idea. Joseph Campbell said, suddenly you're ripped into being alive, and life is painful, and life is suffering, and life is horror, but by God, you're light, you're alive, and it's spectacular. Helen Luke said, the only valid cure for any kind of depression is the acceptance of real suffering. To climb out of it in any other way is simply laying the foundation for the next depression. Anne Morrow Lindbergh, wonderful, wise woman who lost a child, said, I do not believe that sheer suffering teaches. If suffering alone taught, all the world would be wise, since everyone suffers. To suffering must be added mourning, understanding, patience, love, openness, and the willingness to remain vulnerable. All these and other factors combined, if the circumstances are right, can teach and lead to rebirth. Ajahn Chah said, there are two kinds of suffering. There's the suffering you run away from, which follows you everywhere, and there's the suffering you face directly, and in doing so, become free. Robert Johnson, the Jungian, said, nothing is more unendurable than the presence of a beauty one cannot accept. You know, and part of that includes the beauty of who each one of us is in our essence. Anthony DeMello said, suffering is a sign that you're out of touch with the truth. Suffering is given to you so that you might open your eyes to the truth, so that you might understand that there's falsehood somewhere, just as physical pain is given to you so you will understand that there's disease or illness somewhere. Suffering points out there's falseness somewhere. Suffering also occurs when you clash with reality. When your illusions clash with reality, when your falsehoods clash with the truth, then you are suffering. Otherwise, there is no suffering. Ram Dass said, suffering is the sandpaper of our life. It does its work of shaping us. Suffering is part of our training program for becoming wise. Pema Chodron said, the first noble truth of the Buddha is that when we feel suffering, it doesn't mean something is wrong. What a relief. Finally, someone told the truth. Suffering is part of life, and we don't have to feel it's happening because we personally made the wrong move. Rachel Naomi Raymond says, suffering shapes the life force, sometimes into anger, sometimes into blame and self-pity. Eventually, it may show us the wisdom of embracing and loving life. Jack Kornfield said, this is a quote of him that I really like, grief and loss and suffering, even depression and spiritual crisis, the dark nights of the soul, only worsen when we try to ignore or deny or avoid them. The healing journey begins when we turn our attention toward them and learn how to work with them. When we stop fighting against our difficulties and find the strength to meet our demons and difficulties head on, we often find that we emerge from our difficulties stronger and humbler and more grounded than we were before we experienced them. To survive our difficulties is to become initiated into the fraternity of wisdom. A couple from Eckhart Tolle. He said, surrender to the grief, despair, fear, loneliness, or whatever form the suffering takes. Witness it without labeling it mentally. Embrace it. Then see how the miracle of surrender transmutes deep suffering into deep peace. He also said, suffering is necessary until you realize it is unnecessary. Ken Wilber said, a person who is really beginning to sense the suffering of life at the same time is beginning to awaken to deeper realities, truer realities, for suffering smashes to pieces the complacency of our normal fictions about reality and forces us to come alive in a special sense, to see carefully, to feel deeply, to touch ourselves and our world in ways we have hitherto avoided. And Mirabai Star says, your God would never punish you for being a human being. This life is your penance. But it is also more than that. It's the crucible for your transformation. Each trial, every loss, is an opportunity for you to meet suffering with love and make of it an offering, a prayer. The minute you lift your pain like a candle, the darkness vanishes and mercy comes rushing in to heal you.